This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and it's time for another London derby, because we haven't had too many of them this season, have we? But this one, I want to say it's the big one. I mean, it is quite a big one, actually, but it's a team who, at the moment now, seem to be in a little bit of form. And Brentford, as it is, are going to go into this game with their eyes open wide. My name's Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint, rather nervously looking forward to Saturday when we go and visit Arsenal down at the Emirates Stadium, the old Highbury Library, as they used to call it. And we'll be popping down there with our chums and probably getting down there as early as possible so that we don't remember anything of the game because it's going to be an interesting one. Like I say, I'm Billy Grant. I'm sitting in the virtual joint here with my man Laney. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm a bit like yourself, mate. Just, bit of trepidation before the trip to North London. We saw them demolish another team on Monday night at Sheffield United. You hope we're better than they are, which we know we are. But Arsenal are in like red hot form, so we need to calm them down a bit, just like we did last year. But we'll be a bit interesting post-match podcast, that's for sure.
That's right. Calm down. We've got Ali Mullally in the place. How are you?
I'm all right, Bill. I'm just really disappointed that Rashford and Foden spoilt Wiss's goal of the month dream, but there you go. This is what it is, He must have thought he was a shoo-in, and then damn it. Those big clubs saw their big fan bases as well. It's such a shame. But there you go. Tis what it is.
It is what it is, actually. It tells you something. Quality, not quantity. So, there's obviously a quantity of fans that voted to them, but we know that we've got the quality. And we're always used to coming there through the leagues and finishing probably not quite in first place. So at the end of the day, as far as we're concerned, it was a big W for the Bees. It doesn't really matter, whatever. But anyway, listen, we've got a podcast. We're playing Arsenal at the weekend. Like I said to you, we've got loads on this podcast here. I'll tell you what I'm going to run through. We've got JB, of course, with his facts and his fun call. So we've got Bees Breakdown giving statistical and tactical lowdowns on the Chelsea game, because we played them last weekend, and the Arsenal game coming up as well. We're going to listen to what the fans had to say after the Chelsea game. And also, what else have we got? Actually, I'll tell you what we got. I'm going to go down to the Emirates as well, and I'm going to have a chat with Jamie from AFTV talking about the Arsenal game coming up as well, which is all good. But like I said to you, intro-wise, what should we talk about, Ali? There's a big game on Saturday, and then after that we go into the international break, and that international break gives the opportunity for people to still go down to our home ground down at the older the new Griffin Park, as we call it.
well, I hope nobody's going the following weekend, which is the 15th of March, when they should be in Burnley. But
There you go. I keep mixing dates out, don't I?
Let's not get people at the GTEC on the 15th, because they're probably disappointed. Yeah, we've got the women's team are playing Ashmount Lee in the league on the 24th of March at the GTEC, which is fantastic.
Sunday.
It's a Sunday at 3 o'clock. And anybody who went along last year will know what a fantastic atmosphere it was, what a fantastic day it was. The women's team are in absolutely stonking form at the moment. They put, after a bit of a slow start to the season, they put 14 past Camden and Islington a couple of Sundays ago. And Chloe Logie, who's a striker, scored 8 goals, which was something to see. And they had a good win on this weekend when they went 3-0 on the semi-final into the final of the league trophy. So they are on a real high. If you go and watch the women's team, you will see lots of goals. You will almost certainly see them win. They're a really good watch at the moment. It's only £2 for adults to get in and free for kids. But yeah, they really deserve a big crowd. It'll be another fantastic day. I'm really, really looking forward to it. And, you know, there's no football that weekend. There's no Premier League. So just come along and support the girls because you won't regret it.
That's right. That's right. And I've actually put a little call out to my Padford's girls as well to see if they're going to come down. So we've got a few people have already signed up for that as well. So like I said, you get your local football teams to come down, get your local schools to come down. Just anybody come down and just, like I said, enjoy yourself. Because the last one when we played Watford and gave them a right good tonking as well last year, it was good. It was a really good day. 5,500 people, I think, were there. Good atmosphere, good vibes, bit of music, bit of football, loads of cheering. And like I said, everyone that went there was just really enjoyed it. So that's really worth going to. It's interesting because you know you talked about the game, the 14-0 game, which is like, you know, we're talking about proper rugby scores here now. And they played Candy, which is Camden and Islington. And they're actually, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, I'll delve right into rugby grassroots at the moment now. They actually had a bit of a situation where they went on strike. Because
it wasn't the women's team, it was the men's team.
It was the men's team, but men's team in solidarity. Okay, yep. They went on strike because they said, we are not playing. They got to the semi-final of the cup. And we said, we're not going to play this team because the opposition team was called MHFC. If you can call MHFC, but their actual name was Munter Hunters FC, which is quite bad. I mean, I'm laughing here because it's like quite bad. I mean, I sit down there talking to my wife about that, and I said, why would a team go and call itself Munter Hunters? She's going, what team is it? Are they 9 or 10? I said, no, they're grown men. She's going,
kids team called that.
but you know what I'm saying? She's like, grown men. She goes, somebody actually sat around in a room and decided to call themselves that. So anyway, there was all sorts of protests and everything like that. And I don't know what it's got to, but they decided to pull their game in the semi-final, even though they got through to the, I think they won the cup last year and they were going to defend their title. And they said, no, we're not going for it. I mean, you had a few thoughts about that, didn't you, Ellie?
Yeah, I think it's, well, how on earth the league, the FA or whoever allowed them to register under that name without saying, oh, come on, guys, this is not on. I don't know. But yeah, fair play to Candy, their men's team, for saying, coming up and saying, no, that's not acceptable. Because I think, as with any when there's any sort of discrimination, you know, allies are so important. And for women in football, male allies are really important. So, you know, that's, you know, classic example of how to be a really good male ally and stand up for women players. You know, any women in football, I think it's brilliant by them, and fair play to them. And I hope the situation ends up resolved in their favour, because the FA and the league haven't covered themselves in glory, then the other team involved certainly haven't.
Well, okay, and I'm going to just be devil's advocate here, and you know me, I'm being devil's advocate just sitting here between you. People out there saying to you, oh no, football's gone mad. Come on, what are you talking about? Why are people getting so offended? Ali, why are you getting offended by it? It's a bit of a joke, but it doesn't mean anything.
Because you probably wouldn't say it to a woman. You wouldn't say it to your mum. You wouldn't say it to your daughter. You would be really upset if somebody said something similar to your daughter, wouldn't you? You know, men, if they heard somebody talking to their daughter like that, would be rightly upset. So why is it okay just to, oh, it's just a bit of fun? You know, football's come a long way, but it needs to be get passing this, oh, it's just banter. You know, because it's a football, it's okay to be sexist, okay to be misogynistic. Still okay for some people to be racist, still okay for some people to be homophobic. It's like, just stop, just come into 2024, stop pretending it's 1972. You know, you just have to treat everybody with respect. That's all it is.
Yeah, okay. All right, and I've just thrown it out there so that you can give a little opinion. Lainey?
Has Joey Barton commented on this?
Do you know what? I've blocked him on muted him on Twitter because it's just
sure,
sort of
I'm
like.
Sure, I'm sure. I'm sure he's the chairman or something now.
He's, yeah. Well, probably.
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and again, listen. You know, Joey. Listen. We're trying to do a positive podcast here as well. Hmm. And I think the thing of that noise, it just annoys me a little bit about Joe Barton, because almost a lot of people go, oh yeah, but you know, he's right about it. And it's just like, listen, the geezer is a terrible manager, right? And he's an idiot when he was a footballer, you know what I'm saying, right? And he's a terrible manager, and he's got booted out of the clubs that he's at, and he's now sat down and thought, hold on a second, how can I make myself relevant now? Because anybody who's got so much time to literally comment on every single thing to do with women out there, I'm almost thinking, mate, you've got a bit of a problem. Because, like, you know, you literally must spend this whole time with his thumbs on his phone talking about this stuff, and I just sort of think that's just a bit sad, really. And it's because his relevancy in the football game isn't there anymore, so he needs to find himself relevant in another area. And
best ignored. Don't give him the oxygen of publicity. Do you know what I mean?
He was holding up all the kick racism out and her game too when he was a manager. Absolute shitter not to have said what he now says to the faces when he was in work. So obviously now he can't get a job because, as Biddle said, he's a shit manager. He's trying to reinvent himself as Donald Trump. So interesting.
But let's move forward on a positive note anyway. So I'm very positive. Okay, we've got a player who we really missed, who's back on the turf. He's back on the training field, isn't he, Ali?
Oh, Brian. Well, I just sort of like that made me so happy yesterday. Just saw the pictures of him running onto the training field. It's like, yeah, Brian. And then sort of like, I thought, was thinking to myself a couple of hours later, oh yeah, Ivan was going to come back and save us. Now we're waiting for Brian to come back and save us. We're going to run out of people to come back and save us soon. But no, it was great. And so I think it was a little dampened down. I think the club got everybody a little bit overexcited yesterday, because it was sort of like almost giving the impression, oh, he might be on the bench at the weekend. And but then an interview's come out today. It said, well, it's a few more weeks. So probably, as they already said, after the international break. But yeah, it's great to see, because he is actually alive. Yes. Unlike Aaron Hickey and Kevin Sharder, who we have no idea if they're actually alive or not.
Well, no. I'd actually say Ivan potentially has saved us already. I mean, you know, I know we've got a long way of the season to go, but, you know, his goals against Forest and his winner against Wolves, you know, it's the 6 points that he's got.
I was being a little bit facetious.
No, I know. But, you know, I just think that you're right to say that with Brian coming back, you've got that kind of like, you've got your our most potent striking partnership back. You know, we miss Brian and Bumo hugely. You know, his power and his pace and cutting inside and picking the ball up on the halfway line and driving forward. But, you know, we've missed that. And the quicker he's back, the better. Just so we can start shaping up for next season, really. You know, I'm not going to probably propose this today, but I think we ought to have a conversation soon about which Brentford team you would pick if everyone was available, because I think we've forgotten the players we've got, you know. Yeah. So, you know, we'll have that in a couple of weeks, Bill.
That's right.
I don't think it's any coincidence that our season really went to shit when Brian got injured. We were doing all right until Brian got injured, and it really went to shit when Brian got injured.
So Brian's back. We're looking forward to him. Like I said to you, I'd rather he come back at a time when we know that he's going to make an impact, and rather than bring him back early, because I don't want to get injured again. So for me, Sheffield United at home is a key match, I think, from there. So if we can get him back for Sheffield United at home, to me, that would be marvellous, and just go inside there and absolutely do a job on them, get the confidence back in the side, and then we can go on after that and just get the results that we need. Agreed. But that's just me, you know. Thomas Frank may agree with that. You know, so
don't rush him. The last thing we want is for him to be out to the end of the season as well.
That's right. And what else today? I took a little trip down into town, down to Paddington, to go to the Premier League building as well. I've been quite a few meetings down the Premier League, but I haven't been one for a while actually, and I didn't realise they've moved themselves from sort of Baker Street area down to Paddington Basin, and I've not even been down to Paddington Basin. The thing is, like, going to Paddington, obviously Paddington used to be our fourth station that we used to go to. We used to go to Euston the most, and then King's Cross, and then I can't remember what the third one was. Victoria was probably one of our third ones when we were in the third division, and then Paddington was the one that we went to, and we went to Bristol, the two Bristols, mate, and Cardiff, and maybe go down the West Country. So we didn't used to go there that many times a year, and I tell you something, it's changed again. Getting all around there, it's changed massively. I was like, wow. like, you know, so very different. So I went down to the Premier League. I had a meeting. There's myself. We had Ben Bland as well from Bias. He went down there representing the Bees as well. I was sort of representing Bees England and sort of Besotted as well, just giving our point of view. And another 19 clubs as well from the Premier League were all there. All the clubs were there as well. And we were talking about VAR, which has been a big hot subject of conversation between all of us lot, probably over the past few weeks, because of the decisions that have and haven't been made. And it was actually, I have to say, it was an engagement meeting between us and the Premier League. We sat down there, they were really open. It was actually a really good meeting. You know, we sat down there and we gave our points of view about VAR, keep it, leave it, change it, you know, all these points of view, and being very, very frank about it. And everyone got, and it was actually really, it's really well received. And it was interesting, you know, and there's a little survey, and just, I'm just going to give you the sort of the results of the survey. So the surveys, questions were, you know, do you want to keep, basically VAR's got a threshold of basically how much it's used. Okay. So they said, you know, should we keep the current threshold, or should we basically have more or less challenges penalized? And basically people were, over half people, nearly three quarters of the people said, actually, we're happy with the threshold as it is now. We don't want any more or any less challenges penalized. Actually, we're happy with it as no. But then what people were interestingly said, there's like over half the people said that they would like VAR to intervene more. So there's actually less VAR, you know, with the current threshold of challenges. The interesting ones were, though, a lot of people, communication was the big thing. Like, you know, between fans, it's communication, and it's also about it's about the speed of us, you know, like 4, 5, 6, 7 minute decisions. You know, that's absolutely ridiculous. Those are the things that seem to wind people up the most. And they were saying, but people were really quite up for the referees announcing VAR in the stadium. That for them is, you know, it's a big thing, like they did at the Women's World Cup. And that's actually going to be coming in next season. So they're going to be announcing VAR in the stadium next season. And also they're talking about overturned footage. So if you've got a decision and it doesn't go your way, right, normally it's just the game carries on, but they're asking whether or not you could actually, you know, the fans would like to see the footage of something that didn't go their way in the stadium. And again, over 60% of the fans said actually they'd really love to see that as well, which is quite interesting. And also the biggest thing was broadcast audio, you know, the referee's audio being actually kind of sort of played out to people in the stadium so they know what's going on. And like I said to you, sort of, you know, over 60%, probably nearly 70% of people said we definitely want the referee audio coming in. So I think within the next probably 6 months or so, there's going to be quite a few changes. I think the audio is going to come in at some stage. There's going to be footage in the stadium at some stage, and there's definitely going to be an announcement at some stage, and they're going to keep the levels as they are. So it's going to be interesting. And we talked about things. I mean, I talked about the big club thing, as in like big club seems to get, you know, more decisions than smaller clubs. Of course, the Premier League going to sit down and say, no, that's not true. But then everybody else chipped in. We had Sheffield United chipping in, and Luton, and everybody else saying, look, you know, we actually think that is the case. So that was quite interesting. And the main thing for me personally is what I said to them, as I said, you're trying to make all these decisions, these micro decisions, trying to get it right 100%. But I said, you know, having a toenail offside actually is not going to affect the game, but you might spend sort of 6 minutes trying to, you know, to find out whether or not the toenail is offside. I said, you've got to basically increase the tolerances. And I think if you get that, the positivity is there. If they put a lot of those things into place and they decrease the time that it makes to make decisions. I mean, we talked about the idea of teams having, you know, one or two kind of challenges to VAR, and you know, once you've used your challenge card up, you can't challenge again. And they're like, that's quite a good idea. Maybe we should have done that from day one. So I think there's going to be quite a few changes over VAR within the next year or so. But like I said to you, there were some positive noises being muted from the Premier League. So I think you've already got a good idea of quite a few things that we talked about in this Premier League meeting. We actually discussed quite a few other issues from that Premier League meeting in this podcast, but what we've decided to do is we've actually got to clip it, and we're going to put it out separately on PrideOfWest.London. Some interesting stuff. There's also some interesting stuff as well that we aren't really allowed to talk to about on the podcast as well, because it is vetoed as it is until the information comes out. But you might be able to get a little bit of an idea by listening to the conversations as to what may be coming. So really interesting conversations. Check it out on PrideOfWest.London very, very soon. But we're going to carry on with the podcast talking about the Chelsea game and the Arsenal game. Just last thing as well, season ticket renewals are upon us very soon, so we're going to have to be getting our season tickets, which means also that probably your seats will be freeing up because there are some people that probably decide that they don't want to have their season ticket anymore because they're just, you know, bored of
don't want to watch Championship football.
They don't want to just, they want to watch Championship football, you know what I'm saying, yeah. So you might find that there's season tickets coming up. People may be swapping stands, or maybe they just might be swapping to for their armchair going back home. So watch out for that. 25th of March is a renewal. Then after that, the people who haven't renewed, you may be getting a few phone calls from the club saying, hello, would you like to have that season ticket that you've been on the waiting list for? Because apparently there's been a waiting list since we opened the ground. And the waiting list is quite large, I think. I think it's, I don't know, 8,000, 10,000. I don't know. It's quite big. Yeah, I believe so. I believe that.
You had a threshold of minimum number of games you have to have attended as a member to even get to even be on the list.
Okay.
The people that they will phone up. So I can't remember what it was, because a friend of mine is waiting, and there is a minimum threshold. You have to have attended a certain number of home games as a member before you could be on the list.
Bloody hell.
There you go.
Brentford. Bloody hell.
We're massive. We're
something like 12 or something.
Does Cliff Crown ring? Do those phone calls as well as the birthday ones?
Yes, he does.
I don't know whether anybody else notices it. It might just be my imagination, but you know the LEDs along the top of the North Stand?
Yes.
When we went 2-1 up, all of a sudden, it came up with season ticket
renewals. No, I saw that.
It wasn't there the rest of the game. Only when we were winning. It's like, well, it was almost like you could imagine somebody behind the scenes going, quick, lads, get it up now. We're winning.
I look at that because it's got the Besotted logo on it for quite a lot on rotation.
It's got a Herb Game 2 logo on it.
I only look at our one.
I don't look at your one at all.
Yeah, but anyway, listen, I'm going to move this on because we've got to talk about Arsenal in a bit. But before we talk about Arsenal, we have to talk about the Chelsea. Are we going to go away? We're going to have a little drink. And we're going to talk about the Chelsea. Chelsea came to New Griffin Park. And we were, the score predictions before, I said 2-2. And I think Laney said 1-1 in that one as well.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, we were kind of like... And those were hopeful predictions, I believe. You know what I'm saying? We sort of sit down there thinking, I'll be quite up for a draw. You know what I mean? Mm. And... We went into that match really not expecting very much. I mean, I wasn't expecting very much at all. And I know that every single person I spoke to, they didn't say, oh, we might nick a little win here. We might nick a little draw here. They went to that game just thinking, let's go to the game and let's just hope it's not like West Ham, basically. And that's what the thoughts were. And we went into that game in the first half. We kind of sat back a little bit and just kind of like, oh, is that the album? You know, they scored the goal, but we could have probably done a little bit better. We weren't out of sorts. But in the end, we came away from that game gutted. We didn't get a result in it, Laney.
Yeah. I think we kind of get... We've become a bit too used to losing. Let's be honest. The comparisons to last season are really stark. This time last year we were thinking about, you know, are we going to qualify for Europe? And this time this year we're thinking, are we going to survive? And you know, I think we both know the answers to those two questions. Then and now, you know, I don't think we ever thought that we were going to qualify for Europe, and I don't think we think we're going to get relegated. I think, you know, both things were just kind of like too much to ask for and too bleak in this case. The West Ham performance really did kind of put the cat amongst the pigeons, because it was probably, although we scored a couple of goals and the it was only a -2 sort of swing in the goal difference. We looked weak, and you just thought Chelsea are technically a better team than West Ham. Well, they should be. Chelsea are going to really cause us problems, and we were like not clutching at straws, thinking it was going to be a draw. But yeah, that was on the positive side. Not most of us would normally go for a win there, I'd say. But on the day, you know, Brentford got back to, you know, really pleasing us in so much as that they even a depleted team, which this still is, they really, really dig deep. And there's players there that have got criticism, and some have been given grief or written off as not really good enough for Brentford if they want to push on. I'm talking about, you know, Zanka and Mads Roslev. And, you know, they both had pretty impressive games from where I was. We were unfortunate, we could have lost the game as well, let's be honest. You know, Chelsea did have, you know, they had the Sterling chance after they'd equalised, you know, they had a couple that were not sitters, but, you know, Palmer should have scored, and there was another chance later on where it was another shot where Flecken looked like he was taking the fetal position, where he was so happy to have the ball in his hands, and I think at that stage we knew we were going to get a point. So from thinking we were about to beat Chelsea and do the double to holding on for one point, it was a bit stressy, but we got a little bit less than what we deserved, I think. And I think I was really encouraged by that anyway, because the signs are good. I think the players are coming back, and there was really bright performances. And I think Mads Roslev, you know, take a bow, because I call him Big Game Mads, and I'm one of his biggest champions. I don't really understand why he gets, not slagged off, but why he's not given the benefit of the doubt like some others are. He rarely lets us down. I can't think of many games where he's been really out of his depth. He's been part of every single big achievement this club has achieved since getting promotion. The run at Wembley for the second goal, for the Marcondes goal. Just you know, and he's still young, you know, and he's. I think we ought to kind of just let him mature, and you know, yeah, he probably wouldn't get so much game time if Hickey was around, but he's silenced quite a few people. So yeah, there are real big positives. 3 points would have been massive because it pushed us up the league a little bit more. But every single team below us lost, and you know, even when teams below us play well, they seem to lose. I think there's more to come from Brentford. I'm content.
Ali?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said on the pre-match podcast, the post-match podcast, I think that could prove to be a really crucial point come the end of the season. I felt slightly in the second half more that we were more likely to get the winner than Chelsea, actually. And I don't think we're that bad the first half. I think we had a dodgy 10 minutes after they scored, dodgy 10, 15 minutes after they scored towards the end. But I think prior to that, we were probably the better team. And certainly in the second half, for large periods, we're the better team. Though, you know, Dave's already talked about how good Mads Roslev was. And I think it's not his fault he's not Rico Henry or Aaron Hickey. But he's still a very good player. And like Dave said, he never, ever lets us down when he comes in. I thought Reguilon on the left had a good, much better game, much improved from Monday night. And I thought we were generally, we really looked like in the second half that we believed we could win it, that we believed we could get a result. And I think because the team started looking like they believed they could win it, I think the fans felt like we could win it. And it did feel like a disappointment. We didn't win it. But, you know, yeah, I think anybody who said that they would have been happy with a draw going into the game is lying. You know, that's 1 point further away from all the teams below us. And there's, you know, one thing that's really, you know, annoying me a bit about this is Ivan Toney is playing like he doesn't care. I'm thinking, did you watch the same game as I watched? Because Ivan, he didn't score, but he was involved in the build-up to both goals. And he was holding the ball up, doing those things he does well. And I think people have forgotten that Ivan Toney was never this maniac who ran around at 100 miles an hour, pressing everybody outside. I think he's possibly carrying an injury. He's possibly got a tale of whatever illness he had. But, you know, he wasn't outstanding, but he did the job that he was there to do. And as did everybody, really. I think there wasn't really anybody who really let us down. I think we probably could have done, we should have done better for both of their goals. And crosses into the box is something we've really got to work on, defending crosses into the box. It's been a problem for a long, long time. And we're going to have to do better at it against Arsenal. But yeah, I thought it was a really promising performance. And, you know, I think it gave us a bit of the kick and a bit of belief that I think we needed after West Ham.
That's right. So listen, I mean, we've talked about the game. We're going to go over to the terraces. We're going to listen to the fans to hear what they had to say immediately after that Chelsea game.
I don't think Chelsea are very good, but with the team that we got, that was a decent performance today. Disappointing goals, you know, two similar goals, back post headers again. We've done that a lot this year. But you can't really fault much else about the performance and the effort. And the people who couldn't see where the next point was coming from, well, there's one. You know, we probably need three or four wins now. You can see that we can get those. There's some top performances, as Thomas is out there today. But, you know, Norgaard, Tony. I've got to give credit to Mads Rørslev today because he's coming for a little bit of stick about not going forward. He was our most creative attacker for most of that game. Disappointing. I think in hindsight, it's not a bad point either.
It was disappointing because we hit the post twice in the second half. The two back post headers was their two goals. They didn't create anything much more than that, really. Nothing particularly dangerous. No Fleck and Wonder saves were required. So, we certainly deserved the point. I think we probably deserved the three overall. And I thought we're good. I mean, before the game, looking at the lineup, etc., I wasn't overly excited. I wasn't expecting anything really from it. Especially the way we played on Monday as well. So, I'm very pleased with the performance, pleased with the point, and we could have done better.
Given that their second goal came from the fault that always happens to us, the ball goes into the box, and we simply don't have the centre-backs to deal with it properly. I'm not an expert in the art of defending, but, there is clearly an issue there which we've got to sort out if we want to go on. I suppose at the end of the day, a point will do us, will help us, but I do feel that it's 2 points dropped rather than 1 point gained. And at this time of the season, this point of the season where we are in the league, we need those points.
Rørslev, I thought, had a really, really good game, deserved to score that goal. And I think Ivan had a really good game today without actually scoring, although I would say at the end, he needed to pass or shoot in that move right at the end there. But I thought he held the ball up really well. And what drives me up the wall is he gets zero protection from referees. There are loads of occasions in that game you think, that's Haaland, it's a foul, it gets given. And what's he supposed to do when their defender's got their arms around his neck?
Yeah, I don't know, a really, really positive performance. You've got to be here to really appreciate that, just how hard the boys work today. And it does make it disappointing when you look at the end result and you think, it feels like you're only getting a point out of it, doesn't it? Which I don't want to turn my nose up at it, but with the chances that we had, with how good we played, hitting the woodwork twice, it is a bit disappointing not to get the 3 points, yeah. The important thing is the mentality when you're playing. And when you've got that and you're playing positive and the fans get behind you, it all feeds into itself. And that's the only way you can do it. For a club like us, you have to go to each game individually and tackle it individually, and you get the best out of each individual game.
Second half, I thought, when we showed a lot more ambition, they were rocking Chelsea, they really were. And I thought, you know, if we can use this as a springboard, I mean, the next game, you know, is going to be tricky. But as long as it's a good performance, like we saw in the second half, packed, full of character. Second half, we were winning 50-50s, getting to a good percentage of the second balls. And I just thought we looked so much more effective. You know, go 2-1 up, the crowd. I mean, you could see the confidence sort of like surge through him. It's like a ready back advert, yeah, wasn't yeah, it? You know, yeah, and you know, I've got to say, words for Mads Rørslev and Johan Wisser. I thought they looked like they'd had a lot of spark, a lot of energy. And, you know, we have a week rest now. And it does feel like a bit of a defeat because, you know, we should have won that, really.
Yeah, we could have won it.
And we had two off the post. You know, but that just sums up our luck at the moment.
The second goal was poor, wasn't it? I think we lose it in the midfield, just dawdling on the ball. Keeper should have done better with the shot as well. He fluffed it and then tried chasing after it, didn't he? And a poor defender from the corner. Yeah, I think if you were offered a point before the game, you would have taken it. But then to sort of come out with it like that, you think, especially... Especially when the 3 points are there, 2-1 up, game was in our hands. It was, yeah, a bit disappointing in the end, but I guess better than the previous weeks.
In general, football, it's all about consistency, and really we haven't been consistent enough this season, be it defensive problems, injuries or whatever. But I think if we carry on the way we did today, there's no way we are going down, because really we were solid, we looked strong. There was a couple of individual errors. You put them to one side. I think you look back at this game and think, you know what, that's a good point.
There you have it. Fans straight after the Chelsea game, who are quite pleased with Brentford. A little bit disappointed, it has to be said, but also quite proud of the way that they kind of turned things around after the West Ham game, because it could have gone horribly wrong after West Ham. You know, I think it's unfair because some people are sort of saying, you know, to be honest, with Chelsea aren't a very good side and we should have done better against them. And again, I think this is that Premier League-ism. I'm not putting ourselves down. I'm not trying to sort of say, look, you know, you've always got to sort of like imagine Brentford as being rubbish, and if they actually get a result, it's a bonus rather than us actually kind of aiming higher. I'm not like that at all. I'm just a realist, and I just know the fact that, you know, we've had a million injuries, we've got players out, we've got, you know, a defence that, you know, it's non-existent, and then we've got new players in, we've had to have new players coming in and out all the time. I'm not saying I'm a Pep, but I know exactly what it's like when you have to keep on introducing new players into a side, when you try to start with a system and let your players learn your system and let them know each other. Then all of a sudden you've got another piece of the jigsaw come in, another piece of the jigsaw. So you actually almost got to learn how that player fits into it. And it must be really, 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 really hard, you know, especially as the players who are coming in, and this is not a disrespect to them, are not necessarily the same level as the players that went out. So you've got new players coming in who are not quite at the level, but they're really trying quite hard. And I've said this before, I think it's a miracle that we haven't dipped into the relegation zone, considering the amount of problems that we've had. So some people just need to chill out a little bit and just realise this season is just about getting out of the hole. And then next season we can come back and we can actually kind of reconvene as it is. I don't want us to lose, you know, but I'm not going to be gunning the players or the manager or anybody like that, because we are in a proper pickle at the moment now. But like I said to you, it's interesting to hear the fans' point of view, and like I said to you, really positive about kind of the way that we've dealt with the situation. And in the second half, we were like, you know, it was just annoying that Norgaard just didn't release that ball when he should have done. You know, if he did, then we'd have been clear, we'd have won that game. But, you know, unfortunately he got robbed. You know, the shot came in, you know, Fleck had made a fluff of a save, but then some people said, you know, he didn't have a cap on, so he may not be able to see it. I don't know. You know, they got the corner, but, you know, there's the argument to say we should be defending the corners better. And if Ethan Pinnock was in, but he's not, you know, that ball would probably have been straight out, and it wouldn't have been a goal, maybe the first one as well. But it's all ifs, buts and maybes in Alec.
Can we please start a crowdfunder for Mark Flecken to have a cap?
Yes.
Please. Mm. Because everybody in the bloody stadium knew that Mark Flecken needed to put a cap on, except it would seem Mark Flecken. So yeah. Can we please, get him a cap?
Really, really surprised, because, you know, we talk so much about Brentford and, you know, the small
marginal gains
make a big difference, but putting a hat on when the sun's in your eyes, I would imagine, is kind of like more obvious than anything else. So I'll put £5 into the Mark Flecken GoFundMe.
Got your names on the list.
Yeah,
I have to admit, I'm the only stand I've not actually been in is the East Stand, so I don't know much about. I don't know much about the East Stand makeup and the characters that go in there. I don't know whether or not they're transient, because I know a lot of the sort of the international bees, like the American bees and the international bees, when they get tickets from the club, that's where they get put. I don't know whether or not maybe the tickets that come on sale as part of not the ballot, but, you know, with the members sale, I don't know whether or not those are all East Stand tickets as well. I don't know how it is, but I would say, you know, that if Flecken was and the sun was in the West Stand, I just reckon that somebody, one of the fans, would have actually in the stadium, would have just given them their own cap, and they would have said, there you go, Mark, you could take this, and they would have probably put their hat on his head. But that didn't happen in the East End, and I think that somebody in the East End literally should have taken your cap or your kid's cap and gone down the front and given it to Stuart and say, put that on his head, and that should have happened. But lack of proactivity from characters to myself. We blame them. No, we're not going to blame you. I'm just joking. But anyway, so just going back to that game, I mean, listen, we're just gonna have a look at that, how that game sort of panned out. Chelsea, they were good at creating a high number. Brentford were actually good at creating a high number of chances relative to our possession. And also we stole the ball a lot from Chelsea. We were effective at creating goal scoring opportunities from the flanks. And also we were strong at finishing, but we lost possession often. We played with width and attacked from the right-hand side. We had a high shot frequency when in position, and we favoured long balls. Chelsea, they stole the ball from us a lot, and they also effectively created goal-scoring opportunities from long shot situations. They are effectively creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks and also opportunities from set pieces, but they were also caught offside often. They favoured long balls and dominated possession. Top boy was Mads Roslev as well. Then after that was Cole Palmer and Nicholas Jackson. Then it was Johan Risa and Sergio Reguilon as well. And Cole Palmer actually had six shots. He had the most shots in the game as well. Johan Risa had five and Sergio Reguilon had three. Interesting for Reguilon to have three, showing his attacking prowess, doesn't it, Ali?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just sort of like, the attacking prowess as the stats back out. And my own eyes told me, nice to know that my eyes were actually backed up by the stats for once, because it doesn't often happen. I think attack-wise, I don't think we've got many issues, really. We're scoring goals, we're creating chances. The problem is we are also shipping a lot of goals. Yeah. You know, we only ship two on Saturday, but, you know, I think last week at Petrick with Wolves, apart from that, we've been shooting 2, 3, 4 goals a game. And if you keep shipping that number of goals, it makes it very difficult to win football matches. So, you know, we need to be defending, not just the defence defending better. I think we just need to be defending better as a team. Flecken's obviously found his form, which helps massively. But again, the defence has had to constantly change. And whether or not you think Mee isn't the defender he was last season, I think he still improves the defence we've got at the moment. But, you know, as I think the defence is who we've got, and we've got to work with that defence to make them more solid and less porous. But like the stats show, attacking, go forward, I think there's no issues there, really, is there?
No, and it's just
other than incredibly bad luck in the fact that this is a hell of a lot of goal line clearances against us, and we hit the post a lot. And, you know, it's sort of like, what is this? Has Brian been teaching people that other people had to hit the post while he's been injured or something? I don't know.
And I want to talk about that just quickly, because we did hit the post twice. We had a Yenout hit the post, and it wasn't one of those sort of kind of just pink, it literally cannoned off the post. Yeah, it's one of those ones which is quite annoying. And also Reguilon's header, which basically had the goalkeeper rooted to the spot. You just saw him sort of looking to the right of him. The ball went in and I thought it was in. And it just came and cannoned right out again. And again, those are two chances, two massive chances. If they'd got in, bang, we would have been away, which is really frustrating. But also the lovely part of the game was Wiese's goal, which we haven't really talked about. I mean, Wiese's goal, obviously he tried it twice with the overhead kick earlier on, and it didn't happen quite in the match. And then at the back end, when the ball came across, he had an interesting assist as well. But to be fair, the ball was kept in the air, and then Risa just jumped up and he just did this overhead kick, which was literally right in front of us in the West Stand, and everyone went absolutely ballistic when he scored, didn't they, Ellie?
Oh, it was an absolute thing of beauty. I don't think we could say the assist was a thing of beauty, but it put it in the right place for Wiese, and it's sort of like, it just goes to show that if you keep trying and try and try again, eventually it happens. And it was an absolutely great goal. It was a fantastic goal, and I suspect the XG on it is really, really low, but who cares, because it's goals that matter at the end of the day. And fabulous goal, and it was a privilege actually to watch it live, and it was great that it was in front of the West Stand and not down the other end.
That's right. So anyway, listen, we've got JB. He's going to give us some facts and some funk as we gear ourselves up for a big game at the weekend. And also, so listen, JB, give us some facts and some funk.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall back again. Our three Premier League trips to Chelsea have been fruitful affairs, resulting in maximum points. But at home, we previously had just a single point and not scored any goals. In fact, you have to go back to October 1938 for the last time we scored a home league goal against Chelsea. That was in a 1-0 win, and it was scored by Bobby Reid. He was a left winger, a position usually associated with the number 11 shirt, now worn by Wiese. But this was so long ago, it was actually the last season before shirts had numbers on them. On Saturday, Mads Roslev became the first starting fullback to score this season. Ivan Toney didn't score. Of the teams we've met in all our three Premier League seasons, he's only failed to register a goal against Chelsea and against Crystal Palace. For the first time in the last 10 seasons, we had no corners awarded in a home game. We started this season with an unprecedented 3 draws from our opening 4 matches. We then had one more at Forest on the 1st of October, but have then gone 5 months and 19 games, which is half the season, without a draw, our longest ever such run in the top tier. After the game on Saturday, Ivan Toney made his way to East London to the O2, change into a suit, and 5 hours after the final whistle, he was on stage to give out an award at the Brits. Clearly this is a Brentford first. The closest historical story which has even remote similarities, which was back in 1979. That day centre-forward Lee Holmes finished the third tier game at Griffin Park against Southend. Immediately after the final whistle, he jumped on the back of a motorbike and also made a dash to East London, this time to Barking. He arrived there by 5:30, just in time for his wedding, although not with enough time to change out of his Brentford kit, which he wore under his bridegroom suit. Pretty sure, though, there were no red and white stripes beneath Ivan's suit.
So there you go, JB, facts and funk. And like I said to you, Chelsea, bit gutted, didn't get the result, but like I said to you, I think things are looking positive. At the end of the day, yes, Ali talked about clean sheets. You know, you're not going to win if you don't get clean sheets. My argument is that between now and the end of the season, we're going to have 2, probably 3 clean sheets. You just will do. You just don't know where they're going to come. Ironically, we'll probably talk about later. Probably come on Saturday. You know what I'm saying? But listen, I don't want to jinx it as yet. So anyway, so instead of my guesswork, right, because I'm just guessing, I'm just making things up. Let's go to somebody who actually sits down in front of a computer and he actually works things out, right? He's giving the statistical lowdown on that Chelsea game. And also he's looking forward to the Arsenal game to show us how we're going to tear Arsenal apart. We got the gal off the beast breakdown.
And he's tear him a new one, I thought you were going to say then.
That's right. He's going to give us the statistical and the tactical lowdown of the Chelsea and the Arsenal matches.
Hey, this is Jacob Galler with Bees Breakdown. So for that Chelsea review, Brentford finished with 1.83 XG to Chelsea's 1.81. But even with how close that is, Brentford fans may be a bit disappointed with dropping points after going up in the second half. And I thought that Brentford utilized their high press and man marking less than normal. But they were able to situationally use that to create shots from defensive actions. And then occasionally Chelsea broke Brentford's press. But luckily they wasted a lot of those chances from those scenarios. And the Beast had success going forward from sending crosses in. And they completed 7 crosses in the box, which was the most so far this season. And Roslev's accuracy led to much of that success. He completed 4 crosses in the box with 3 key passes. And he ended with 0.4 XAG. And I probably say this every week, but it's hard not to notice how crucial Norgaard's defensive positioning and emphasis on winning second balls is. He ended with 10 tackles and interceptions, along with 10 ball recoveries as he continues to lead the Premier League.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
League in that statistic. All right, so for that Arsenal preview, they're currently 3rd in the table, but they have the best expected goal difference by only allowing 18.4 expected goals against so far this season. And for reference, Brentford have allowed 15.8 expected goals against just over the last 8 matches. It's also no surprise that Arsenal lead the league with 65 goals after beating Sheffield 6-0 and scoring 5 goals from cutbacks, which is exactly what Brentford struggled to defend in the West Ham match. Arsenal are still massively overperforming. They've scored 10 more goals than expected, which is partly due to their shot selection. They have the highest goals per shot on target percentage, and they have one of the lowest average shot distances. Along with above average finishing, it's making them one of the most dangerous teams in the league. It's also no surprise that Arsenal have created 13 goals from corners this season, thanks to their set piece coach that used to be on Thomas Frank's staff. Arsenal are using similar strategies to Brentford on set pieces. They'll use blocking, decoy runs, and different variations to gain an advantage. So it'll be crucial for Brentford to be tracking runs and then taking advantage of their own set pieces on the other end as well.
So there you go, the Cowler. B's breakdown, stateside, massive, posse, whatever you call them. And like I said to you, always interesting. You can check out B's breakdown of their article on the Besotted website, besotted.com, and you can check it out. He's done the latest B's breakdown of the Chelsea match, and like I said, you're always really interested to sit and work out him working down exactly, you know, what we've done, you know, what Chelsea have done. A lot of people turn around and goes, oh, you know, you should be giving her the crown jewels away, you're giving her the information. I'm not being funny, but if these very rich Premier League teams haven't got an analyst sitting down there and doing that kind of stuff, right, that we've got the Gowler in America doing, then they may as well pack up and go home, because they've all got it and they've all done it, and they'll have sat down, they've got the videotapes and the rewind videotapes and the analysis, and they know all the stats and they'll know all this kind of stuff anyway.
And they still use videotapes, Bill.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
Betamax. That's right.
Which is all good, you know. You sort of sit down there just for, it's rewinding. You know what I'm saying? 15 minutes. Go and have a cup of tea while we just rewind the tape. Like, you know?
Yeah, we've got to wait for rewinding it. Yeah.
You've got the younger, get stuck in the machine. You'd have to get your pencil out.
That's right. You've got, the younger kids out there thinking, what are they talking about? Like, it was
like, they say that a lot, I think.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, so which is all good. But what are we talking about? We're talking about Arsenal.
Talking about the Gowler.
Talking about the Gowler. The Gowler's given us the lowdown on the Arsenal match as well, because we've got a big game against Arsenal coming up Saturday. It's a 5:30 kickoff, which basically means that we can go to North London rather early and get right involved in a lot of activity to make sure that the
tuck right in
that the game actually seems like it's a really pleasurable experience when you're playing one of the most potent attacking sides in the country. We're going to go away, have a little drink, come back. We're going to talk about Arsenal. They're quite good. They had a bit of a dodgy patch, but unfortunately it didn't last long enough for them to be playing us, and they come back and they seem to be firing on quite a lot of cylinders at the moment now. However, football is a funny old game, and you just never know when things are going to go right or wrong for you, depending on what side of the fence you're on. At the moment, everything seems to be going right for Arsenal, and not everything is going right for Brentford. I was on the Anfield Wrap podcast just before we played Liverpool, and I very boldly said, right, and I hadn't been drinking at the time, I very boldly said to them, I said, look, and they said, so are you going to get on against Liverpool? And I said, well, mate, I'll tell you something, right, you know, you don't believe me, but I think that we're actually, even though we shouldn't do, we're going to go in and we're going to beat you, right, when we play you, right, on Saturday. And they're like, oh, really, Bill? I said, yeah, because basically we've got four matches. We've got Liverpool, we've got Man City, we've got Chelsea, and we've got Arsenal. And basically, we're going to win one of those games. And I said, so we might as well start off with you. And then if we don't win you, then we'll go on to the next one, and the next one, the next one. So basically, we've done the Liverpool, we didn't win. And then we've done the Man City, we didn't win. And then we've done the Chelsea, we almost won. So now it's all down to Arsenal. All the chips, mate. I'm telling you, I'm at the roulette table when I've got the one chip, and I'm just putting the black, you know, put the black on, and, you know, the ball's going to come in. And I just think, because it's just absolutely no chance of us getting any result at Arsenal on Saturday, I just reckon it's one of those ones where it's going to be a bit of a freaky one. Do you think I've been sort of sniffing too much, whatever, maybe, Ali?
Yes. In the cold light of day, yes. But, you know, it's a difficult comparison because you know, I remember thinking when we went up to City last year, thinking, and they were in similar free scoring form at the time, thinking anything that's not a battering, 3-0 or less is a good result. And we know how that turned out, but we did pretty much have a full strength team out that day. That is a slight difference. We're a long way from full strength. So, and Arsenal are looking really, really good. But football is a funny sport. And if we all knew what the result was going to be before the game, then nobody, football wouldn't be the sport it is. It wouldn't have the following it is. So strange things can happen. There's no reason why it might not happen. They're without David Raya, of course. Ramsdale hasn't played for a long time. Maybe we can exploit that a little if we can get the ball off them. You know, statistically, and if you think about it logically and with your head, you know, anything that's off a battery will be a good result. But never say never. Never say never. And if it, otherwise, none of us would go, would we? We'd just go and sit in the pub and just ignore the game and pretend it's not happening. So never say never.
That sounds a really good idea.
Yeah, it does sound like a good idea. It sounds an even better idea.
I like that idea.
But it might still happen. I mean, we've known situations where we've gone to away games, places like Wrexham and Scunthorpe, and we got all the way there after travelling for five hours and sat in the pub. And Leicester, and just sat in the pub beside the ground, and people are thinking, why would you do that? But that's just the kind of thing that you used to do in the EFL days, as they call it, the lower league days, you know what I'm saying? It was all about the day out and the football, let's say kick football out of football. We definitely kicked football, but we did that. So whether or not you're going to do that at Arsenal, that's a different scenario altogether. But like I said to you, with my prediction, I think...
Yeah, in normal circumstances, in normal years, Bill, I'd be with you there. And I'd say that we probably were going to win one of those four games because, we probably would have come up short, you know, just because of the quality teams that are those ones you mentioned, you know, Liverpool, Chelsea... Man City and Arsenal, but we're so way down on our maximum strength that we just got to be a bit realistic, and I think we just got to come away from North London on Saturday without being humiliated and have without any injuries, any more injuries, and so we can go to Burnley and really give it everything we've got, because that's a game where, you know, we want to get at least one point out of, if not the three. It's some people just don't want to hear the obvious. We are ravaged by injuries and we are struggling clearly because of that. Some people are looking for it's someone's fault. I'm not sure what that achieves apart from pointing fingers at people that are just trying their hardest and doing the best for Brentford Football Club. I think if there was some massive weakness at Brentford, the powers that be would have highlighted it and got rid of that person, or that department, or made changes. That this Brentford Football Club have achieved what they've achieved by being at the cutting edge of most things. They're not going to let a glaring error or a massive weakness just fester. It's just not what we're going to do. So,
and you're talking specifically about,
I'm talking specifically about, there seems to be, there is this kind of not movement, but there's a kind of like a few people that have coined a phrase of, anyone that defends the team or anyone that kind of makes excuses for the season as being a happy clapper, which I find really amusing, that, supporting your team through thick and thin is seen as a negative. I'm not saying that, know your place, you're a fan, blindly sip the Kool-Aid and watch us get relegated. If we had our full strength team and we were where we are now, then there's problems. But it's just bloody obvious, really, isn't it? It's like saying, you've got a puncture in the car, and you're wondering why your car's not working, but you're not allowed to say that it's because you got a puncture. It's because it's someone else's fault. It's the mechanic that fitted it or whatever.
But then some people turn around and they'll say, well, okay, but the recruitment wasn't right because we should have recruited players in December or in the summer to have made sure that this situation
wasn't 100% get that. And, you know, there is some merit in that. I'm not saying like everything has gone our way and we're where we are just by pure fluke. You know, we did, you know, from my perspective, and I'm a critic as well. I don't blindly follow everything, but we did try and spend big money, but they just didn't want to come to us. And you can't then just go and, you know, spaff that money up the wall, as an ex prime minister once said, just for the hell of it. We're so strict in the criteria of what makes a Brentford player. We've said for years that we needed a left back, and we've said we needed backup for Ivan. We said that for a long time, and we actually said pre-season we said we needed another midfielder just in case. And you can point the finger at some of the recruitment, but. You know, I think they did try. I think they maybe just. I think they aimed a bit too high, perhaps. Where we were pushing probably for Europe, and I know that for a fact. I think if we had all our team, I think the powers that be believed that we were going to improve on last season. And you know, it's just the one after the other injuries that have kiboshed that. But yeah, you can certainly point the finger at a left back situation.
And I'm just interrupt you there, but you keep coming back to the left back scenario, and we've talked about this, like I said, for seasons. But I know for a fact, you know. This is the whole thing. It's like they're saying when we buy a left back, we're going to buy. We want to buy a wicked left back, somebody who really suits. So I know for a fact that they bid for a number of players. This MLS player end up going to. I think he ended up going to Monaco, right? Again, and we bid for him. We've looked at certain players where we've been looking at situations, and like I said to you, it's been quite difficult. But you know, the left back scenario has been a situation. But what I know their plan in place was, if one of our left back goes, so if Rico Henry does go down, right, it was Aaron Hickey who was meant to step in, right?
Which he did for a while,
but their whole thing is that said we had no idea. You can't plan for Rico Henry being out for 8 months and then Aaron Hickey being out for 8 months, because he said that is just something that, and then all the other defenders being out as well. So it puts you in a bit of an impossible situation, because as we said, these players are injured. They haven't left the club, so you can't just sign another player. You can't, because you're not replacing them, because they're still members of the squad. And it's almost like you're praying for them to come back, and you're just praying for yourself to go, look, let's get this over and done with. Let's go. And that's the awkward situation that we've been in, which we've probably actually never been in, because we've had long term injuries, but we haven't had sort of massive long term injuries on such a massive scale. Yeah. Which means that you can't replace players.
I agree. I think going back to the original point. The original point was, you know, there certainly seems to be a reluctance to give the full implications of what is obvious is a massive injury crisis. That almost certainly on its own, plus the Ivan Toney suspension, has meant that we've struggled. We started off all right, and you know, maybe that's masked. Well, it masked the problem, but it's probably saved our bacon. If we didn't have such a great start, you know the win at Fulham, etc., we'd be properly probably looking down the barrel at the moment. It's just, you know, so it's just that I drawing the line under this section really is like, we need to just get the season over and done with and rebuild. And you know, it's good if we're not involved in a pre-season competition or a tour. You know, I'm sure there might be some friendlies, but you know, not like last year. We need to just prep for next season, survive as quickly as we possibly can, get Thiago in the camp, and all the players that are fighting their way back from injuries, and then have a proper really, really big go at not resurrecting our reputation, but just kind of getting back to where we were last year.
Just to add to what Dave's been saying, actually, I think what highlights it more than anything else for me is at no point would anybody have said we need to buy another centre half. We've always had for this season plenty of centre halves, and now we are down to the bare bones even in centre half ranks. That highlights for me more than anything else the injury crisis, that we've hardly got any. We've down to the bare bones of the centre halves. We've literally got one fit full time, so to speak, rather than lone player full back left, which is Mads Rose left, and it's just you could say, oh well, we should be able to deal with it and blah blah blah, but we haven't got the squad depth because we are a small club that other clubs that we hear about injury crises at Liverpool, Newcastle, wherever, all the time, who have much bigger squads are able to deal with. And these injuries have all been to first team starters, not to squad players or somebody who comes off the bench, with the exception, you'd say, probably of Josh. First team, people you would have said would have been first team starters at the start of the season. So that underlines it. I don't think, probably almost since September, we haven't been able to field our first choice 11. So, and it's just got worse. And I will just, there's a couple of things I want to say about this. This whole thing really winds me up. This player's not trying. The players are not trying. Absolute bollocks. Absolute crap. None of those players crosses that white line on a Saturday or whenever, thinks, oh, can't bother today. Can't be bothered. None of them. Not one of them. So, you know, that really winds me up. Not performing at the best of your ability for whatever reason, whether you're just having an off day or whether you're carrying an injury or, you know, hey, you're just not good enough compared to Manchester City, or you're not good enough compared to whoever. That is not the same as not trying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say anybody who wants to boo a performance has the absolute right as a paying customer to boo that performance. It is your absolute right to do that. But if you boo the performance and then your coach comes out and says, I'm not really happy about the fans doing that, don't then throw a hissy fit because you've exercised your privilege to show that you're not happy, when he exercises his privilege to say that he's not happy. It works both ways. So I think everybody
so just
needs
explain
to start.
To people,
no, can I just say very quickly?
No, explain to me what happened, because some people listening, they may not know what happened.
Well,
with
it was
Thomas
a bit Frey. I'll be honest here. I think Jay Harris, the Brentford reporter, the F, I think, did a bit of shit staring at the press conference after the game. There was a bit of booing at the end of the first half. There's a bit of sort of like, oh, maybe it was at the ref, maybe it wasn't at the team, whatever. But anyway, Jay Harris called Thomas's attention to it in the press conference, saying, you know, how do you and the players feel about the booing at the end of the first half? And Thomas said, oh, really? I wasn't aware of it. But really, if that's the case, then basically, what the fuck are you, you know, you're supposed to support the team. And a lot of people had thrown their toys out of the pram about this, saying, well, if I want to boo, I'm going to boo, which absolutely nobody's saying you can't boo. But then you're exercising your privilege to say you're not happy. He's got every right to exercise his privilege to say that he's not happy about what you've done. So everybody still needs to get behind the team, support the team. And, you know, we all need to be on the same page here, you know, and let's stop having a go at whoever, having a go at this player, having a go at the coach, having a go at other sections of fans. Let's just, God, we should all be in this together, really, shouldn't we? So,
you know, I've got a question. Is there an acceptable time to boo, right? And I'm asking that question because, like, you know, you've got different scenarios that they may have. You know, a team comes off the pitch and is 1-0 down against Chelsea, where they probably could have been 1-0, and they haven't played, you know, that badly, and you've got booing. Are there other scenarios what Brentford or another team might be in where you think actually that's fair enough for the fans to boo? Because, you know, fans are saying, I'm allowed to boo, but is there kind of almost like a predicament?
I think it's a different threshold for everybody, isn't it?
XB you're talking about, Bill.
That's right, yeah.
XB. Martin Rowlands, boo, Martin Rowlands.
I honestly don't think I've booed Brentford.
I've come close on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, but it might have been a couple of occasions, but it may have been 6-1 at Layer Road in God, whenever it was, when we got hammered by Colchester.
But I think the point is...
I don't think losing in the... I can't see why you would boo. And I agree with Ali. It's your right to if that's what you want. But I'm not sure anything's really warranted that.
I don't think it achieves anything at the end of the day. I don't think it achieves anything to boo a team that is low on confidence. I don't think it achieves anything. I don't think it helps them. You know, there's a few people coming, all the booing gave them the kick up the backside for the second half. They needed absolute bollocks. Whatever was said in the dressing room gave them whatever they did, why they came out in the second half to do that, not because a few people booed. So don't try to take the credit for an improved performance in the second half. You know, you want to boo, that's fine. But, you know, if your coach then calls and says, well, I'm not very happy about people booing, don't just throw all your toys out the pram.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, talking about booing, we're going to go over to the Turkish. I'm going to go down to the Emirates. I'm going to have a chat with the Turkish. Down at the Emirates station, because I'm going to find out from Turkish whether or not, because I know the Arsenal fans, they did a little bit of a boo, because if it hasn't reached the threshold that they think about, there's a little bit of kind of boo action that has been going on in the past. So maybe I might ask his opinion on booing and whether or not there is a right time to boo and a wrong time to boo. We're going to go over to Jamie from AFTV. We're going to have a little chat about the mighty bees and the not so mighty Arsenal.
So big game Saturday. I'm actually here already. I'm so excited about the game. I thought I'd come down to the Emirates and I'll be hanging out here, and I might even go to a couple of the bars that we're going to go to and just try out a few places before we actually get to the game on Saturday. But I'm standing outside here with James from AFTV. We thought we'd flip the script a little bit. You know, I always talk to the Turkish man. I always talk to the Robbie man. But I thought, nah, mate, he's got to change it up this time and talk to the James. Because James, I don't know, I've got no idea what he's going to say. You know, he might say, and Arsenal's going to get relegated this season, and if he's going to say that, I need to have this down on tape so that we can put it out there and loop it and remind him about it next season. But James, how you doing?
Well, I mean, I'd love to put that prediction out there, but I think we just secured safety a couple of weeks ago mathematically. So really excited to chat about the game. We're getting to a really excited time of the season. Always, I'm not just saying this because I'm on the podcast, always had a lot of time for Brentford, for many reasons. Growing up as a, you know, I did my master's in journalism, Brentford opened the doors to us, always gave us access, always a good club, used to go watch a bit of Griffin Park as well. Always enjoy this fixture and always enjoy seeing Brentford do well. So I'm excited to chat about it.
So listen, I mean, James, first of all, I want to say to you, you're a happy man. You're smiling away here. You're thinking you could see a trophy in the distance, or am I getting a little bit ahead of myself?
Well, we're dreaming for sure. If it becomes a reality, we hope. It's that time of the season where things are getting exciting and we're getting into crunch time with everything. You know, after this Brentford game, there's 10 games left of the Premier League season. That's when you really start to look at it and go, okay, 10 games to go, where are we, what's the running looking like, or what are we predicting for our obviously title hopes. But we need to do the job in the Champions League. I mean, it's hard not to look. I mean, Brentford is such a massive game. It's hard not to look to what's happening on Tuesday against Porto as well, because that's a massive opportunity to book ourselves a place in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, which we haven't done since 2009, I think, 2010. So it's a really, really big couple of days coming for Arsenal. Trophy at the end of it? I can't sit here that confidently when we haven't won the Premier League in 20 years and we've never won the Champions League. But I sit here hopeful.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm all putting you on the spot, and you're thinking, why are you doing this to me, Billy? Because at the end of the day, you said you haven't won a trophy for a very long time, so you would just like a trophy. Champions League, and you've got the league. If you were only able to pick one, which one would you choose? Ooh, there you go. Look, I could hear your brains whirring on this one.
Do you know what the battle is? The battle is we've never won the Champions League, so I want that. I really want that, you know, Kings of Europe crown. I want that. At the same time, though, I just think, even though you don't get an extra trophy for it, you don't get extra medals, there's nothing tangible about it, but for Arteta to beat Klopp and Guardiola to the Premier League title, I think would be unbelievably special. So I'm going to say I want the Premier League this year more than the Champions League.
So there you go. So listen, Arsenal, I mean, this season, I've been, like I said to you, smiling. This season has gone, I'd say it's gone well for you so far. We played you, like I said to you, seasons ago, and we thought you were a very good side, but you last season when you beat us, but then you tailed off a little bit. And I'd put that down probably a little bit to experience, player experience and things like that. And I was talking to Turkish as well on his show as well on AFTV, which you can check it out on the AFTV channel as well. It probably should be live by now. Check that out. Me and Turkish, we always have a good old chat, chin wag, about 40 minutes talking about stuff. And I said to him, listen, you know, last season, you know, you can't buy experience, right? Players coming through, your younger players getting a year older, them having that heartbreak of losing out on things, losing out in finals, semi-finals, losing out on the title, that just makes them stronger for the following season. And you've come back this season, I believe, as a stronger side. You had a little bit of a dip, but you're coming back into it now. Talk to me about this season.
Yeah, this season's been quite a ride, because last season felt like we started on fire and then the momentum just kept building and the wave was getting bigger and we were all behind it. Suddenly you're top of the league, then you're 2-3 points clear, then you're 5, then you're 8 points clear, having beaten Tottenham away from home. You're thinking, oh my word, we're having an absolute dream season. But it fell off quite dramatically, actually. This season has never felt quite as high, nor has it felt quite as low, which is good. We're operating at a much more kind of comfortable level. Everything's just a little bit more, I want to say, standard, which hasn't been the standard for Arsenal for many years, but we're at a point where we're in the title race again and things are just ticking really nicely. I'm enjoying it. I think I'm enjoying it more now because in the last, well, call it in calendar year 2024, Arsenal have started to click. The goals are coming, and what Arteta's been trying to do in terms of, you know, improving the defence, getting good structure to the team and not making us quite as wild as we were last season, I think it's starting to pay dividends. We're starting to see what Arsenal have been trying to do to make ourselves more sustainable for the season. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it and I've got a lot of hope. But last season was emotional in a great way. Let's hope this, which has been less emotional, ends with a much bigger high.
That's right. So, again, you're looking forward to some of this season. I mean, players, I mean, you're playing the bees as well. I mean, players to look out for. I mean, we know you've got a lot of exciting players out there. You spent a lot of money on Declan Rice. This has obviously paid off for you as well. For you, who's exciting you for Arsenal?
Might be a weird one to say, but Jorginho at the moment. And I could pick out Ødegaard, who's in the form of his life, and I could pick out Bukayo Saka, who's, you know, scoring goals and having a great time. And even Kai Havertz has come to the party recently, he's doing really well. But Jorginho, he's just been this kind of orchestrator. He's come into the team for certain games and everything's channeled through him, and it's given Declan Rice a little bit of license to get forward as well. And I think that's just better balance for our midfield. But when I was watching the Newcastle game, what I couldn't believe was that they never got near Jorginho. Now, in fairness, that might be a lot harder to do than it seems. But, you know, they've got a dynamic midfield and they couldn't stop Jorginho playing. And I think that's, if Brentford are to slow Arsenal down, I think the way is to break up their rhythm, and Jorginho is one of the players that you've got to stop to, you know, in order to do that, because he just knows how to find pockets and give the ball really quickly. He knows where the pass is going to be before he receives it. And watching him, having totally written off his transfer, we signed him from Chelsea, has been an absolute, it's been a privilege really, because he's a really intelligent footballer.
Yeah, and as a manager, we'll talk about Arteta, because he came into Arsenal. There was a lot of question marks about him, you know, especially the season, and I have to mention this as well, where we gave you a bit of a tonking down at New Griffin Park as well, course, you know, I just got to mention that one as well. But that season, there's a lot of question marks about him. It was early days for him now, but again, I find in the Premier League that people don't really seem to have much patience, and people already wanted him out and moved on. But now, obviously, he's kind of proved his worth to a certain extent. I mean, how is Arteta for you as a manager?
Well, sticking by him was absolutely the right decision, and you've got to give credit to the owners for that. He's doing a fantastic job. I mean, he's changed his reputation in the game massively, to the point where now Barcelona are reportedly trying to, you know, nick him off us when Xavi leaves. And who'd have said that, you know, that our manager would have been wanted by Barcelona a year or two? Well, maybe, no, a year ago that might have been said, but 2 years ago. That's a big jump, and I'm really happy for him, because have I always been totally behind everything he's trying to do? No. Have I been critical at times? For sure. But one thing I'll give myself some credit for is that I've always said that you could see he was a manager that would go far in the game, because the things he was trying tactically and the way he spoke about the game, you knew there was just someone who really, really knew his football. And does that translate to being you could be a very good coach, does that translate to being a very good manager? And it's starting to now, which is great to see. And, you know, he's built a side that, yeah, he spent money, there's no question. And yeah, this is his fourth full season. But to be in a position where after four full seasons we're saying, you know, it's not completely out of the realm's possibility we win a Premier League title or a Champions League, I would have said that's a pretty well-run process. So good on him. because he, you know, he's taken a lot of heat from fans, and some of it rightly so, some of it went too far, but you know, now he's delivering results and we hope it continues.
Yeah, I've got to ask this question. He ain't playing tomorrow, I say unfortunately. A player that we absolutely loved and we were almost in tears when he left us and he came to you. It's really funny because when players come from inverted commas smaller clubs like us and we kind of nurture them and then they go to bigger clubs, I find what's happened is there's a little bit of a rabbit in the headlights thing going on. Mm-hmm. Because people almost like, it's almost like, you know, when you got when you're at school and then this new boy comes in the class and you don't quite trust him, you know what I'm saying? So a couple of people might go and have a little chat with him, but they don't really cozy up to him too much. And it's almost like, you prove to us, mate, that you're one of us, and then we'll start talking to you. And I think the same thing happened with David Raya, where he came into the side and all of a sudden it was just kind of like, yeah, what's he doing here? I mean, look, now we've already got our man, we've got the Ramsdale, so what's he doing? It's not, that's not fair. So I thought that he came and he came into your side having a few struggles, having a few issues with kind of lack of confidence in his ability. Has that kind of dissipated over the past few months?
The biggest problem Raya had coming to Arsenal was that Ramsdale was so loved. And you know, you referenced, you know, when we were talking about 5 minutes ago about the defeat, the 2-0 defeat when you beat us, you know, your first game in the Premier League, Mikel Arteta, the start of that season. And Bernd Leonard was the goalkeeper for that game. So the goalkeeper's changed a lot under Mikel Arteta. It looked like at one point Emi Martinez had earned his place. He gets sold, Bernd Leonard's back to number one, Ramsdale's then signed, then David Raya. But Raya is looking the closest right now we've seen to what Mikel Arteta wants from that position. He hasn't, I will be honest, he hasn't looked like an elite shot stopper in the way Alisson does. It feels like Alisson keeps Liverpool in games. But he's phenomenal on the ball, you all know that. His cross collecting has been superb, especially in the last 2-3 months. He's really, really settled in. You're not sort of seeing the positioning errors that we saw at the start of the season, like against Lons and Chelsea. He seems to be really on it with that. And he seems really sharp. And actually, the thing I like about him, he seems incredibly calm. You know, Ramsdale, don't get me wrong, a lot of love for Ramsdale. And I think he's a very, very, very good goalkeeper. And I think we could be near enough having a similar season even with him in goal. But the thing that Raya's got over Ramsdale, he seems a little colder in a good way. He seems a little bit more just straight-faced job to do. Whereas Ramsdale, I think, in another way, was always up for the occasion in a more animated sense.
Emotional.
Yeah, but that had positives. Like away at White Hart Lane when, well, it was not White Hart Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, when we went 2-0 up, dominated, second half, Tottenham stuck it on us. And Ramsdale was huge in that, and he fueled the energy to get... Now, has Raya got that kind of performance in him for Arsenal? We haven't seen that yet, but then maybe we might not have to, because Arsenal are looking to control games and ensure that they're never asking their goalkeeper to do too much work. But in terms of pure distribution, character, calmness at the back, you know, cross collecting and the odd bit of shot stopping, Raya's been brilliant, and I think a lot of people are genuinely accepting that he is the best goalkeeper at the club right now.
So look, bees are coming down. You know a lot about Brentford. Like I said to you, you said before as well, you used to watch them back in the old Griffin Park. Sorry, I'm going to wipe a tear at me eye here. Griffin Park days. Four years to the day. Our last game at Griffin Park, Sheffield Wednesday, 5-0, we beat them. 4 years to the day when all of a sudden, bang, COVID came, shut it down, and we weren't able to go back. So we never were able to say goodbye properly to Griffin Park. So that day actually makes me very, very sad. And I remember, actually, I'm going to tell that story. I've probably told it on this podcast a few times, where my daughter, who was really mad for coming to Brentford, she was, 4 years ago, she was 10 years old at the time, or maybe 11 years old at the time as well. And she'd been to all the matches home and away that season, and she got really ill that day, so she couldn't come to Brentford. And we had the sort of COVID rumours about the thing happening, and she goes, oh, I'm really sad I can't come because I'm never going to go and see Griffin Park again. And I went to her, don't be so stupid, of course you will, like, you know what I'm saying? She goes, no, there's not going to be any football. I said, yeah, there will be. And after that, she got it completely right, and after that there was no football. So yeah, it's really, really sad. But yeah, just talking about Brentford, tell me, you know, listen, Arsenal, brilliant side, but there must be something that strikes a bit of fear. Who in that side must be striking some fear into you? Who's not injured, by the way, on Saturday?
Yeah, look, it's the most obvious answer, but it's Ivan Toney. Because he's such a handful, because he bullied Saliba and Gabriel, actually, when you guys came here last year, we drew 1-1. Because I wonder if he's, you know, playing to prove a point, not just to the Brentford fans that he wants to repay the faith, but, you know, obviously rumours around, you know, potential summer move and all that. So he just feels like he's really on it right now, Ivan Toney. How he's played, you know, throughout the start since returning in January, I'm not 100% sure, but the bits I've watched, I think he's looked really, really good. The thing about Brentford for me, we could talk about Ivan Toney, which I just have, but Thomas Frank, I think, is a really, really top manager. And like I said earlier, they opened their doors, Brentford, to young journalists who were learning their trade. And I got to, you know, be in a press conference with Thomas Frank, really classy individual. But I'm really happy for him and what he's done in the Premier League. He's made Brentford ultra competitive. What did you finish? Ninth last season? And I remember doing a video on my own channel saying Brentford have been brilliant, but I think because Newcastle got top four and Brighton got sixth and Villa had this surge under Emery, I think it sort of went under the radar how unbelievable a season Brentford had last year. You know, being incredibly competitive, doing the double against Man City, you know, taking points off almost everyone in the top six and making life really hard for Arsenal in that game at the Emirates. And yeah, I've just got a lot of time for that. My favourite player of yours, by the way, is actually Brian Mbeumo. But the problem is he's had injuries, hasn't he? Is he expected to play this weekend?
No, he's injured. No. He's only just come back and he's training at the moment now, which we're very happy with. Yeah. And he's training at the moment now and he'll be back maybe at the end of the month, which is all good, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But Bruno is your top player.
I love Mbeumo. Actually, I'd love to add him to this Arsenal group. Honestly, probably I love Ivan Toney, but he is someone I just think he could do a job across the front line. But yeah, he's brilliant. He's brilliant. But if he's not available, then...
And how's the game going to pan out the weekend?
I mean, I was ultra humble ahead of the Sheffield United game. I said it'd be a nervy game and we end up winning 6-0.
Please don't be humble. No, don't be humble for me.
Brentford have injury problems. They have had all season. I actually think you've been a little more open than I'd have hoped for in games against City and Liverpool recently. I thought you did work at the Etihad, to be fair. You made them work hard for that. But I'm going to go for a 3-1 Arsenal win, if I'm really honest.
3-1.
I will say it's caveated with if Brentford make it an awful afternoon and really hard work, that wouldn't surprise me because Frank and Brentford have promised that. They've delivered that time and time again in the Premier League.
Listen, James, I've been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And listen, enjoy the rest of the season you've played us as well. And I'll catch up with you at the weekend.
Same to you, mate. Thank you so much. Thank you.
The FTV crew. And I'll say they're confident. Ramsdale is just shit David Raya. As the songs that you can guarantee those will be the songs as long as they don't score in the first minute and they just kill our singing. Because that's, for me, that's just the worst thing. That's the worst thing about any game. If you play the opposition and they, like West Ham, when they scored them two goals within 6 minutes, that absolutely destroyed us, that did. Because we were just like, we had no comeback from then. And the atmosphere and the singing, everything like that was just dead. So, like, you know, for me, let's get to halftime as well so we can actually have a good sing song. Ramsdale's got to get it right, get it proper, you know what I'm saying? And then they can do whatever they need to do in the second half or not, as the case may be, or we do what we do in the second half, which is all good. But interesting little thoughts there from the Turkish, wasn't it, Lainey?
Yeah, I respect what he says. He's knowledgeable and he understands the opposition. So fair play. I go to North London, as I said in the intro, like full of trepidation. I still back our team. And then, you know, again, if that makes me a happy clapper, then I'll have a T-shirt made. I'm quite happy to wear it. I fully enjoy us being in the Premier League. I know that these are the best days of my supporting life, and I thoroughly want to enjoy it, and I want to get behind the team. They'll be here next year. I absolutely know it, and we've still not spent a day, a second, a millisecond in the bottom three. And I firmly believe that's going to remain the case. You know, I might be wrong and, other people might be proved right. But I just think, you know, just chill a bit. Look at the team. Look at what we need to do to survive and enjoy it. I think Arsenal on Saturday is something that we need to just get out of the system. And I think if we can come away from that, as I said, with our heads you know, a plucky point, a plucky defeat, something that we can build upon, I think. But you know, it's all about Burnley from my perspective now.
Yeah, and you say you're going to wear the shirt as well there. You just said you're going to wear the shirt there, ladies.
I need to get it made first.
But you need to get it made as well.
Rename the podcast Happy Cappers podcast.
Happy Cappers t-shirt as well. And is that going to go with your half and half scarf as well? Because I don't remember when you went to Arsenal, you were always like looking, you know, picking up, see if you can get
that. I might wear the only half and half scarf I've got is the Brentford Leicester one. So I might wear that on Saturday.
That's right. And if you listen to, like I said, to the post match podcast after the Chelsea game as well, I actually spoke. I don't know if you listened. I spoke
half and half man.
It's hilarious. I was driving on the A406 to the game, and I saw this car broken down by the side of the North Circular Road, and on the street was just loads of half and half scarves. Like I'm saying, Brentford, Chelsea, half and half scarves, and this guy was there changing his tyre, and I was like, oh my god, it's half and half scarf man. So after the match, I saw him outside selling his half and half scarves, and I interviewed half and half scarf man. So definitely check the post Chelsea post match podcast if you want to listen.
He was thrilled to be interviewed by you, by the side of it. He was absolutely thrilled.
Well, of course he was.
I actually caught him before, and he goes, "You saw me, did you?" And I said, "Yeah, mate, I saw you outside the road." He goes, "Oh my god!" Like, you know, so it's quite funny. But listen, we've got our sources all over the place. They are. But anyway, sort of just coming back to that Arsenal game, because we're going to sort of wrap this up in a little set. This Arsenal game we've got coming up. What have we got coming for us, ladies? So we've got Arsenal, very good at very strong at finishing scoring chances and also defending set pieces. They're strong at attacking down the wings, creating shot opportunities, creating chances using through balls, creating chances using individual skill and attacking set pieces. Where they're weak, avoiding offside, and that's about it. They control the game in our half. They like the ball. They keep the ball. They like to attack down the right. They like short passes. They attempt through balls often, but they're non-aggressive, and they basically play the first 11, the same first 11 most of the time. So
lucky them.
That is fairly exactly very different to us. Very, very daunting, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, it is. I wish David Raya was playing, to be honest. I think you know, he's a we know his weaknesses. There's a good chance we could get at him. You know, he's weak in the air. We could pepper the goal with long balls. We need to be at our very, very best to get anything out of this. Get this one out of the way, to be honest with you. I'm not going to say any more. I just want to, you know, I want to go there. I know there's some really good pubs, some really good breweries. I just go there for the day out, to be honest with you. And just get it out of the way.
That's right. So listen, we're going to get the game out of the way. I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to just get a score prediction from Ali Malali.
Oh, God. I think we'll score.
Oh.
But I think we'll also concede.
And just before the talk prediction, I'm just going to say to you, because just going back to the previous match as well, because, I mean, obviously, Wiesa, we flipped it up and Maupay came out, Wiesa came in, and I thought he did very well. You know, Roslev coming in as well, I thought he did really well. There's a number of positive changes in that match. Do you think that we're going to stick to that type of formation, or do you think he might flip it around again? I mean, we normally go three at the back anyway for games like this. So do you think we're looking pretty similar with a side that actually did reasonably well against Chelsea?
Yes.
Yeah,
I can't see. Well, we haven't got enough defenders to make much change of any changes in the back.
It'll be very similar. You know, play.
I can't see. The only one he might bring Jensen in as a starter for either Jena or Onyeka, I don't know.
I don't think he will. I think it'll possibly be unchanged.
I think there was any change, I think that would probably be the only one he would make.
Okay, so same starting lineup as the Chelsea game, which would be really interesting. So just come back to it. Give us a score prediction, Ellie.
Oh.
She was faffing. You can't. Come on. Yeah, come on. Get on with it. Get
3-1,
on with
3-1
it.
3-1 Arsenal.
Oh, here we go. Laney.
5-1 Arsenal.
Oh.
Jesus.
And I'm going to go 2-2 to the Mighty Bees. Mighty Bees.
That's not 2-2 to the Mighty Bees.
It is. Because you know, if it's 2-2, it's a result to us.
2-2.
To all is a result to us, is what I'm going to say. You know what I'm saying? Which is all good. So listen, Saturday, it's going to be all good. I've managed to orchestrate a game. We're playing, what's it? Panthers are playing, what's it? LTFC, I think it is. So we got an
early game. What on earth does that stand for?
I don't know exactly. I didn't even bother to ask them, actually. I just said, right, we'll just stick to LTFC. So we got LTFC in the morning, which is all good, nice and early. And then I'm going to be heading straight on the train from Southgate all the way down to the Arsenal area, and we're going to hook it up in some sort of brewery. So where are we going to be hooking? I don't know, Lainey. We're going to be going somewhere. We would hook it up about sort of 12:30 or something like that, starting off on that. So I'm actually looking forward to meeting up for a few beers beforehand and getting ourselves definitely nice and lively. So like I said to you, this is the besotted Pride.
Sorry, Bill.
Yes, go on.
Sunday, 3:00 at Brentford Women are playing AFC White.
AFC Whiteleaf. I used to work in Whiteleaf, actually, right by the station there as well, when I used to come all the way from Brentford area and drive all the way down to Whiteleaf, which is just behind Purley as well. But that's got nothing to do with the game at all. That's the Ron Nodes area, actually, around there as well, just to let you know as well. But again, a lot of useless ex-old school Brentford information. This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thank you very much for listening to us. Don't forget to buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Thanks for your support. Thanks for subscribing to us. Thanks for writing a review on all these good podcast channels. And like he said to you, Saturday, we're going to Arsenal. We're going down there right early. We're going to get there so early. We're going to make lots of noise. We're going to give Ramsdale some grief. Ivan Tony. As we say,
David Raya. You're just a shit, David Raya.
Come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees. Come on, Brentford.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.